Welcome to Let's Talk. This is Dr. Hassan Batts. Appreciate you joining us to listen. In the studio today, we have Wilfredo Melendez. Wilfredo, welcome, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to this conversation because one word to describe you I would choose is interesting.
Okay. I'm not sure that's that's kind of...
Listen, it's interesting. And I would say if I had to choose two words, I'd say interesting and deep. You have depth to you.
Okay, depth sounds much better. Interesting. Yeah, interesting usually sounds like there's nothing positively associated with interesting.
No. Interesting in a positive
okay,
sense.
Okay.
So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. They may not know you. Talk to us.
All right, I can tell you a little bit about my history. So I was born in Paterson, New Jersey. Paterson, New Jersey, usually the point of reference that I give people is the movie Lean On Me with Morgan Freeman.
That's right.
Right? That's right.
Joe Clark.
Yep, Joe Clark, yeah. Right? East Side High.
Hail to East Side.
Exactly. The East Side Ghost. The man, they used to call him Batman because he used to go. Yeah, so I grew up in a pretty, pretty tough environment. Mm-hmm. I was there probably till I was maybe 15.
Okay.
And then I moved here to Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah. And how was that transition?
It might be a bit of a surprise to people to find out that it was a bit jarring. I think you talked about this before, is that sometimes people would come out and say hello, and that alone was a tough transition, something to get used to, because usually when you grow up in those kind of cities, you keep your head down. You don't really say hello. So it was a bit of an adjustment, let's say.
So people didn't talk to their neighbors in Paterson?
No. If you didn't know someone, you did not say hello.
You did not speak to them.
Yeah.
So you moved to Allentown. What year are we talking about when you were 15? You're going to date yourself here.
That would have been 94, 95, like maybe earlier than that.
So the question I want to get to is, Allentown more like Paterson now?
It is. It truly is, including all the potholes.
Listen, you're going to piss the mayor and the city officials off that one. That's one of the things that comes to mind when you think about the city, though. It's potholes.
Yeah, not too long ago, I could say that we didn't have potholes, and now we have potholes.
What do you attribute that to?
Part of it was that I think the repairing from the utility company that were doing, and the other part is the increase in population.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So you're talking about quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about quality of life in Paterson, growing up. Quality of life in Allentown, moving here as a teenager, and quality of life in Allentown now.
Okay. So let's take those step by step. Number one, quality of life in Paterson when I was growing up. It was probably, especially the teenage years, anxiety producing. Let's call it that.
Mm-hmm.
Always looking over your shoulder, that kind of environment.
It was a rough environment.
Rough environment.
80s, early 90s.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So that...
We hear about that a lot on our show.
Mm-hmm.
Folks coming from inner cities, Brooklyn, Philly, Paterson... That same story, right? Like high cortisol levels, anxiety, danger. So that's what you were reared in, kind of.
Yeah, high stress, kind of always on guard, right? Always on guard because you always have to protect yourself, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Then fast forward 15 years old, you moved here. What was Allentown like in the early, mid-90s?
It was pretty empty. Nothing like it looks like now.
Mm.
Yeah, it was pretty empty. The population was low compared to now.
Okay.
All right. So not as densely
populated. So you went to Allen or Durham?
Actually, believe it or not, I did not go to high school here.
Okay.
I actually ended up dropping out because I didn't want to complete my final year. It's a long story.
We call it pushed out on this show.
Oh, there you go. Okay. I was pushed out. Yeah. Yeah. And I ended up getting my GED.
That was my journey.
Yeah, there you go.
So pushed out of high school. So you never stepped into high school here?
No. No, okay. I didn't. No.
Dropped out, pushed out, got your GED, and then what?
And then I actually made my way to L-Tri-C.
Listen, we have parallel journeys. I started with L-Tri-C, too. I saw Dr. Bieber earlier, man, and always share that story.
Okay. Yeah. You know, it's funny enough because when I
shout out to community college.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a game changer.
It is.
Has the potential to be a game changer.
Absolutely.
And shout out to GEDs. People like to attack GEDs and make people think that they're never going to accomplish anything. I have a GED. You have a GED. Some of the most brilliant people I know have a GED, man.
And oh, absolutely.
The journey takes many paths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I when I first moved here, one of the things was I ended up working as a musician professionally.
Okay.
So I ended up, my cousin hooked me up, and you know, he actually put me in bands, and I would play, you know.
Wait, did you play with Billy Joel?
I'm sorry?
Did you play with Billy Joel at all?
No.
The Allentown song? You know?
Oh, no. I see. That was an attempt at humor. Yeah, That was good. He caught me. But no Billy Joel. Okay. I used to play a lot of salsa, like salsa bands and stuff like that. Yeah, Latin bands.
Okay.
And so I played for years, and then eventually I kind of wanted to study music, so I ended up going to LTRIC, signing up. They didn't have any music, and it turned out I just signed up. And eventually that led to me taking a class in philosophy, which ended up, my first philosophy class, I ended up failing the first philosophy class.
Okay.
And I went back to take it again and fell in love with it.
I failed a couple classes at LTRIC too.
Okay, we have a lot in common.
That's right.
Very similar journeys.
That's right. So you failed your first philosophy class and then fell in love with it.
Yeah, the second time when I took it.
And then
I got addicted to philosophy. I said to myself, and this part is important, because I, growing up in a place like Patterson and having my background, I think you develop sort of, I wouldn't call them poor study habits, but you don't give that much of an effort. It's not in you, right? So one of the things I did was I remember once I found my passion with philosophy, mm-hmm. It's hard to explain, but it was like I gave an effort.
That's right. And it changes things.
It changed everything.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, my grades were up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting, going to East Stroudsburg, where I got my bachelor's.
Okay.
And that was a great experience. And then I got my master's at Westchester University.
Everyone that goes to Westchester loves that school. You were on campus?
I was on campus.
Did you love it?
Yeah, I did love it. I did love
everyone it. I know that attends that school love. What is it about Westchester?
Well, I can only speak about the philosophy department. At the philosophy department in Westchester, we had what I would call like abnormal amount of female teachers.
Okay.
So I was lucky enough to have a lot of female teachers in philosophy, which you don't find.
Okay.
So I was very fortunate, and I ended up...
Are there people of color in philosophy historically?
Yeah, there are, but
men of color.
I think a lot of people, it's been my experience that a lot of people of color, not now, but before, they would end up going into sociology.
Of course.
Or kind of branches.
Yep.
There's a lot of people who famously like wanted to study philosophy, but they were like, yeah, this isn't
so, for me. So you were exposed to and supported by a lot of women throughout your studies.
Oh, absolutely.
And what makes that different? What made that different for you?
It's getting a different perspective. Historically, the canon of philosophy, when you study it, it doesn't include people like me. And it's very important that I was encouraged by people who were also sort of, you know, outliers or something.
Yeah, yeah. Experienced marginalization.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They supported me. So even to this day, I think it's so important. It changed the landscape. So,
the way that I do this show is I never know what we're going to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe in just bringing interesting people on the show and the conversation will flow. You talked about quality of life. You talked about finding your passion. And now you're talking about representation and how all of those things impacted your journey, man. And I think those are the conversations that our listeners need to hear, right?
Mm-hmm.
So continue on that path, right? Like the value of those things and how they... I mean, I hear mentorship in there, right? Like how it's kind of driven and guided you.
Yeah, I ended up being an adjunct professor for like over 7 years. I taught.
So you decided to be oppressed because they're like $6 an hour.
Yes, yeah.
I too have been an adjunct
professor. Trust me, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it is. And it's funny because.
But very rewarding.
Is it? Yeah, exactly. I ended up teaching for like 7 years and. Even that, right? Even having someone who is a person of color teaching a philosophy class is rare.
Right. No, I've never experienced that.
Right. So already, even for those 7 years, you know, I taught here at Northampton Community College. I taught at in Florida, in Orlando, in Jacksonville, and even that. What's representation is incredibly important.
People walk into the classroom and they don't expect you to be there.
Mm-hmm. But there were people who paved the way for me who dealt with a lot in a department like philosophy, who maybe at the time wasn't as welcoming. Departments of philosophy that don't want to hear about philosophy of race. What's philosophy of race? Yeah, they don't want to talk about race and racism. They don't.
I mean, even the people, when you talk about the canons of knowledge, right? Even the people that you reference, the scholars or the founders, do not look like us.
No. No. Yeah. I, on campus at Westchester, a couple of times, I was known as the race guy.
Oh, you keep bringing up race, right?
Yeah, I was the race guy because I used to write a philosophy of race and everybody else, you know.
Because they didn't see color, I'm supposing.
Yeah, you know, epistemology, like, you know, what is abstract concept. Yeah, and I was very interested. I thought philosophy is applicable to or sort of, you know, theories of oppression, obviously, wow. You know, so I thought it was important.
Yeah.
You know, Frantz Fanon, Jean-Paul Sartre, all
of
these
course, of course.
People who
I
spoke.
I wouldn't consider Fanon philosophy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Really? If I remember correctly, he studied under Merleau-Ponty, I believe.
You would know that better.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. Somebody's going to correct me.
A psychiatrist, a revolutionary
psychiatrist. Yeah, yeah. But they have, you know, we claim a lot of people. Yeah. You know? They don't have to be,
a degree in philosophy.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So what is philosophy? Because there's someone listening right now that has no idea what we're talking about. What's the elevator speech? You got 2 minutes. What's philosophy?
Well, you just did it right now, right? You asked the philosophical question. You said, what is philosophy? What is, right? You could almost put anything at the end of that. You could, what is? You're asking questions.
Okay.
You're probing. You're being curious.
That's philosophy.
That's philosophy. Philosophy is asking is honestly wrestling with the tough questions. The questions that don't necessarily always have answers.
And you paid to study that.
Mm-hmm.
And you taught it. There you go.
And I taught. I paid, and then I tricked people into taking my classes.
Paying you.
Yeah, paying me.
To teach it,
exactly.
And did you answer? Because the question always comes to me, and we joke about this, right? Is if a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, does it make a sound? That's philosophy to me.
Okay, yeah. You know? Yeah. No, it's one of those philosophical riddles meant to make you exercise, make you think, right?
That's right.
I'm sure most of us can run, right? To a certain extent. None of us are Usain Bolt.
Okay.
Most of us can shoot a basketball. None of us are Michael Jordan. It takes work, right? Philosophy is that when it comes to thinking. It's putting in the work.
So it's a muscle.
Oh, it's a muscle. Yeah. It's, you know, one of the things I used to say when I used to teach my classes was, my intro classes, I would say, don't wait till someone dies in your family to become a philosopher. Because sometimes when there's a death that's, you know, a close friend or something, all of a sudden you become a philosopher. Now you start thinking about the finitude of life. You start thinking, wow, my life is finite. What does this mean? How could that person? Don't wait till you're high to become a philosopher, right?
Yeah.
People get high, and all of a sudden they start thinking, oh, what is it all? You know, so all these things. But the problem is most people are philosophers when they have some type of awakening, something that happens in their life. But in general, philosophy strives to sort of say, no, you can do it without waiting for that.
Or without marijuana.
I mean, you could do it with marijuana, but right now you could do it
without mushrooms.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You don't have the microdose to think.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, seriously, that's what you're saying.
Yeah. You can do it now. You can do it now, and it's better to do it now than to wait to do the work.
Okay.
So I think that's incredible. And like you said, it's a muscle.
So what you've just taught me, in closing, till we go to the next segment, is that I am and I've always been a philosopher.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. Everyone is a philosopher.
Okay.
Just like everybody can walk or everybody can run, but not everybody is the same Bolt.
Almost. Most people.
Most people. Most people. Yeah, correct. But the question is, are you going to practice it? Is that something you want to work on? And that's what philosophy is, right? You're working on that. Yeah, we can all think. Can we all think well? That's not the same thing.
So I'm always trying to figure out how our producer over here, James, comes up with the titles for this show. I think I know the title for this show. Everyone is a philosopher, because he smiled and he started writing when you said it.
So, there you go. There you go. That sounds good.
That line caught his attention, man. You're here with Dr. Batts and Wilfredo Melendez asking the questions that matter. Don't wait. We'll be right back, though. So until we return, think, ask, and ponder. Peace, this is Dr. Hassan Batts, host of Let's Talk on WDIY. We focus on those hard-hitting conversations that are necessary, that others shy away from, through interviews with local guests and unique perspectives on life in the Lehigh Valley. Contributions from listeners like you can help keep programs like this that leave you thinking on the air. Just call 610-758-8810 or go to WDIY.org and donate today. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Hassan Batts, and I'm here with Wilfredo Melendez, the philosopher. Is that fair?
You know, for a long time, I really avoided that title. I did not like it.
But I'm a philosopher.
Yeah, but like, exactly. Yeah. But I remember I was sitting in a bachelor's course, and a professor used to call us philosophers. So I'm comfortable with it now. But
can you say it? I am
a philosopher. Oh my God. I'm not a professional philosopher right now, and I'm not teaching it right now. But I'm a philosopher.
But you're living it, right?
Yeah.
So for the second part of the show, I want to ask you, and I always ask the question: do you remember the Cameron song "What Means the World to You"? You're one of the few guests that remember that.
Mm.
So Cam says, what means the world to you? And that's a philosophical question.
It is.
That I pose to you. What means the world to you?
Wow. I think that, you know, we're talking about deep questions, right? And one of the deep questions that I always, my thing, especially lately in philosophy, is ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What makes a good person? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to live well? That matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
That matters to me. So that's one of the big things that I...
So reflecting on your decisions and your thoughts and your relationships?
Absolutely.
And asking that? Okay.
It's one of those things, you know? We have free will, so
yeah.
With free will, is that a gift or a curse?
That's right. That's right. It's easy to go the wrong way.
Exactly.
Especially if you're not asking those questions.
Yeah. So we talked about previously that idea of don't wait till afterwards. You do the work now.
That's
so
right.
Prior to making those decisions, you already have that, you know, sort of ethical structure in your head. You're thinking, you know, so help you make those decisions before you make them. And
so right living is what means the world to you at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is that for you? Is that for the world? Is that for the people you love? Like,
for all of it.
For all of it.
For all of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's, we've witnessed a lot of evil in the world, right? We witness a lot of evil. Historically, we always witness a lot of evil in the world. And,
You talking Genghis Khan and Hitler, kind of? Like, what are you talking about?
Genghis Khan, Hitler, we can go into
politics. I could say some more recent names.
Thank you,
but
yeah.
I don't
know if the
station wants
me
to. Yeah,
you know where I'm going. You know. Yeah. Listeners know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But you see that kind of stuff and you say...
We see children dying
in
places across this world.
Yeah. And what role can you play? What's your role in the world, right?
Mm.
And I think that's important to think about. So,
our elder Phyllis Alexander, shout out to elder Phyllis, always tells us you've got to do something.
Yeah.
And I think that may be what you're saying, right? Like, what role? You have to play a role. And even to the point, do you agree that your silence makes you complicit?
Ooh, that's a good one, right? That was one of those philosophical questions, ethical questions. Yeah,
I'm
absolutely.
A philosopher.
Right, exactly, right?
Yeah.
Does being neutral, does that make you complicit, right?
Yeah.
What is it, Switzerland? Like, do you want
to... So you've told us what means the world to you. What keeps you up at night? Not philosophically, specifically. You have a shirt on that says end gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
Do you own that? Is that one of the big issues for you? Or is it single-use plastics? Is it, you know what I mean? Like, this is what we call a limited pool of worry. There's so many things. What's your thing? What keeps you up at night?
Wow. I think that... That's a tough question because you're right. There are many things.
Yeah.
It's not single use plastics, unfortunately. Okay. You know, like you said, we have a limited capacity for that.
We do.
But so
there's so much. The children dying, their ducks covered in oil. Like what's and not that you have one thing, but what comes to mind when you think about the change in the world?
I think what comes to mind, and this is gonna seem abstract, but philosophy, is levels of empathy. And how people don't practice and refine their levels of empathy. I think that's incredibly important.
Okay, because it would prevent some of those other
It would prevent so much. It means, honestly, at the end of the day, all my studies in ethics and everything, I just keep going back to empathy, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, how much could be avoided if you have empathy for your fellow man, right?
Because we end up normalizing other people's pain
if
we can't feel it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah, empathy is it's big. It's really big.
Okay, so we talked about Patterson. We talked about L-Tri-C. We talked about teaching. what's next on that journey, or if you want to skip to the now, what's next from here?
That's a good question. And to be
it's a philosophical question.
Yeah, right? And to be exactly. And to be completely honest, I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure. And I'm okay with that. Okay.
So you don't have to be sure. You don't have to know where, what's next, what's outside that door.
No, no.
Okay. Are you prepared for it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think that right now I had a bit of a career change. I wanted to serve. I did AmeriCorps for a year. Ended up with this organization, Promise Neighborhoods.
Another vow.
Exactly, exactly.
Very rewarding.
Yeah, right? I've chosen, apparently I've chosen a life of poverty, right? Yeah. Serving it.
You've chosen a life of service.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm ready, I think, for something new, but I don't know what that is.
What message do you have for someone that has walked in your shoes? Whatever moment in time that was, is someone listening that has experienced the struggles, the successes, the triumphs, the pain that you've experienced? What's the message for them?
I would say you have no idea what the future holds. Don't sell yourself short. Keep working at it.
Okay.
Keep working at it. You know, if we're lucky, you know, life is a long journey. Mm-hmm. And things that at some point seem like just you're in it at the moment,
yeah,
seem like such a struggle. Yeah. Later on, 10 years from now, that's a blip.
Yeah.
That
in the rear view, things appear smaller, right?
Yeah, you're going to look back and you're going to go, oh, that was just this little tiny time in my life. That's all it was. Mm. When you're in it, you know, it seems like it's never going to end. But, you know, it's just a tiny, tiny, tiny
bump. I wouldn't have wanted to hear that at the time.
Mm.
But now, you know what I mean? Because as you're saying it, I'm thinking about sitting in a prison cell. Like,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want it. Man, oh, head on, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm here. This is painful. But looking back at it, my life is so much bigger than those mistakes, than those decisions, and those spaces, and those places.
Exactly.
But it's hard to recognize in that moment, right? Like, you failed that class. It might have been heartbreaking to you.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And you're right. You're right. It's, you know, for you to say to someone,
it's going to get better, bro.
It's like condescending. It doesn't sound right.
In the moment, it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's
retrospect, it's definitely
Yeah,
not.
It's like going to a hurricane site and telling them, don't worry, this is going to pass.
This will be rebuilt.
Yeah, this is going to be. Yeah, it's it's not my place to say, but it's your place to recognize that is the reality of your situation.
I think 50 said joy wouldn't feel so good if it wasn't for pain.
Mm.
Is 50 a philosopher?
He's a lot of things.
That's not one of them.
I don't know if that's one of them.
All right. Who's your favorite rapper? This Ooh. Is still on subject. This is still on topic. Uh-oh. Who's your favorite rapper?
My favorite rapper? Not saying the best, right? We're not doing that.
Your favorite.
Man, let's go down the list who I grew up with, right? I grew up with Rakim. I grew up with Big Daddy Kane.
Okay.
You know what?
So your favorites are in the 80s?
Yeah, a lot of them were in the, a lot of them were in the 80s. It was just, it felt like a golden era. I don't know how to describe it, right?
The 80s is your era?
Yeah.
For rap music or for literature, movies, TV shows in general?
Yeah, just
the style, the dress?
Yeah, I would go with
what
that.
What is it about the
80s? I don't know. Because
the 80s are very distinct from the 90s and the 21st century.
80s is the best time to grow up, right? When it comes to entertainment, you think about the pop culture that produced from the 80s.
What, living couple? What's the different world and things? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. It's just everything was okay. It seemed like amazing. Back to the Future, whatever you want.
Karate Kid.
I mean, it's like it feels like the golden era, right? Like,
what was the theme?
I don't know. Right, that's a tough one.
Yeah, okay, favorite book.
Ooh, favorite book. That is a tough one. I gotta say, if I had to pick a favorite book, it might be Plato's Meno.
You and about three people listening to this show know.
I know.
In a nutshell, what's Plato's? I know the allegory of the cave. That one I know.
That's
about the extent of my
Plato. I mean, it talks about Socrates and there are other ones, you know. Plato's Republic. There's a lot.
I'm familiar with that one. I've heard of that one.
Exactly.
Okay.
But in terms of like just picking one book,
you can't.
No, I definitely
favorite
can't.
Movie.
All right. So I have two favorite movies. One replaced the other. Number one was The Matrix.
And then The Matrix 2 after that? Or?
Exactly. I love The Matrix. I love The Matrix 2. After that was A Patch of Blue, starring Sidney Poitier.
This is an older movie?
Yes, an older movie. It's about a white young woman, blind, who ends up falling in love with a black man, and he literally can't see color.
Literally.
Jesus.
But it was a philosophical movie.
It was very philosophical.
So this is not Someone's Coming to Dinner or Look Who's Coming to Dinner. Because everybody saw who was coming
exactly,
to dinner in that
movie. Exactly. No, this is one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen. It really shot up to the top of my list as soon as I saw it.
What about it?
I don't know. She has this line, and I can't remember what she said exactly. But it's the way Sidney Poitier, he's amazing in the film. It's them falling in love at that time, but the situation, right? When she does find out that he is black, she says something, and I hate that I don't know the exact line, but she says something like it's beautiful. And it was at that time, I mean, it's mind blowing, and that's you got to take it in context, that film being made at that time, and I don't have the year offhand, but
I'll check it out.
Amazing. Yeah,
this is not like the Dave Chappelle skit.
No, not at all. No.
Okay, what is your message or hope or dream for the future? We've got a couple minutes left.
I would say that we all practice empathy.
So you're back to empathy. That's your thing.
It's one of those things where.
And what does it look like in practice, in real time?
In real time, it looks like you check yourself to see if you're being callous. When you're judging someone, when you're talking about someone.
Are
you dehumanizing them? Imagine
that's easy.
Think about historically what we could have avoided with empathy, right? Think about something like slavery. Think about how the fact that you couldn't picture that that's a human being, or that you think of them as less than, that empathy gap, right?
So when you see pain in the world.
I see lack of empathy.
You lack of empathy. Mm-hmm. Chalk it up to that.
Yep.
The things we're seeing on the news historically, in your day-to-day with coworkers, watching kids in the neighborhood, if you see any kind of conflict and tension.
Thinking about what I can do, right? If I categorize you in some way, I can sever empathy.
Yeah.
Right? So I can say, as a black man, you're less than human, and that gives
you anything to me.
Now all of a sudden that gives someone permission to have no empathy for you.
Yeah.
I can say you are Republican or Democrat, and I can sever that empathy for you.
Yeah.
Right? So I mean, I can sever empathy wherever I want. I just have to categorize you in a certain way.
That's what we say. My mentor, Dr. Jones, would say, remove the label of human and replace it with, and that's what you're saying, another label.
Mm-hmm.
A subhuman label that you're not worthy of dignity, you're not worthy of empathy, is your word, you're not worthy of regard.
Exactly.
And I can do anything. I can justify anything.
All of a sudden, I can justify my hate. I can justify the way I treat you. That's such a big component of evil, right? That's such a big component.
It's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For evil to live and exist.
Yeah.
Well, Fredo, thank you for joining us. Anything you want to say in closing?
No, I just want to say thank you. That was great. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. I do want you to add one more thing. You're on this health journey, and you've motivated me to join you on this health journey.
Thank you.
Tell us about that real quick. What was that about? What does it take? How do you maintain it? You've lost a lot of weight. You're looking good. You're glowing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that was a lot of work, a lot of exercise, a lot of dieting. And that was just basically getting to, you know, sort of a midlife crisis in a good way.
Okay.
Where
No red convertible.
No red convertible. It's more about this sounds kind of weird, but, you know, this is one of the only, maybe my last opportunity where I can, you know, athletically go all out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to have them, you know, that many opportunities. So this is where the time where I can do it. I think you have to be at a point in your life where you're stable, you're at peace, and then you can do that. That's what happened to me. When I got to that point, I was like, okay, now I can do that.
Now you have the capacity.
Now I have the capacity. Now I can do that. I can constantly, because it takes monumental effort. It really does.
Thank you for sharing your journey. Thank you for being who you are. Thank you for encouraging us to have empathy for one another. This is Dr. Batch. You're listening to Let's Talk. We're here with Wilfredo Melendez, the philosopher. Are you an empath?
I wouldn't go that far.
a man with empathy for
thank
others.
Thank you. Thank you. That sounds better.
Appreciate you, man. It's been great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Be well. Peace. Okay.
If you enjoyed this program, you can hear this episode and more, along with our other public affairs programming, at WDIY.org, on WDIY's free mobile app, on your favorite podcast platform, or live weekdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here on WDIY.